It's 9:20 and time for this morning's Ask an Expert segment each weekday at this time on KCBS. We're working to get answers to your questions about different aspects of the ongoing pandemic. Today, it's all about back to school. How can schools reopen safely in a way that protects students, teachers, and staff? When might that happen? We're joined live on the KCBS Ring Central Newsline by Dr. Megan Collins with the Johns Hopkins Berman Institute of Bioethics. She leads their eSchool Plus initiative. Dr. Collins, thanks so much for joining us this morning. How are you?
I'm doing well. Happy to be here.
Can you fill us in a little on the work you and your colleagues have been doing? What's the idea there? What have you been looking at?
Absolutely. I think we could all agree that there's probably no hotter topic in the pandemic right now across the United States as much as how are we going to reopen schools? And when are we going to reopen them, and when is it safe, and what types of contingency plans will be put in place? And we have a team at Johns Hopkins, which is across the Berman Institute of Bioethics, as well as the Schools of Education, Medicine, and Public Health, with experts trying to think through some of these issues with particular focus on children from disadvantaged communities who we know have suffered the most with school closures this past spring. You know, at one point in time this spring, over 55 million kids were out of school. And that's a big deal for any kid. But if you think about a student who was also getting their meals at school, their, you know, parents are essential workers, and so there isn't necessarily supervision in the home during the day, or they may be in unstable housing or not have internet access. Those kids were really impacted the most. And what the eSchool Plus initiative has developed is a suite of tools to really think about equity considerations as we are pivoting to the discussion about how and when to reopen.
You know, the Secretary General of the United Nations this week called this a huge crisis. He warned, and I'm quoting from him here, a generational catastrophe that could waste untold human potential, undermine decades of progress, and exacerbate entrenched inequalities. A lot of people would look at that and say that's alarmist. Would you agree, partially agree?
I am incredibly worried about the education and health equity issues that are only going to be exacerbated by this pandemic. And we already know that the learning loss from this spring has been profound, with one recent report saying children from low-income families were losing almost a year of school time. You know, we always anticipate there's a summer learning slide, but we have a spring slide on top of that, and which we're calling the COVID learning slide. And then we're going into the fall with, you know, not entirely clear guidance about how schools are going to reopen and how they're going to continue to provide services virtually for districts that are going with the online option.
Okay, well, let's get to questions and remind our listeners that you can send them in while we're conducting our Ask an Expert segment. Our email inbox is at askus@kcbsradio.com. This morning's expert is Dr. Megan Collins from the Johns Hopkins Berman Institute of Bioethics. Let's see here. First question. This one says, part of me says it's a good idea to get together with other moms and their kids and do some kind of shared education. I won't use that word pod, but I'm also really worried about the health risks. We've been really careful since this started. Your thoughts?
So there are some very consistent public health messages that I think we should emphasize for everybody, and you know, certainly parents with children, and these are mask wearing when you're outside the home, hand washing, social distancing. If you have symptoms and you are sick, you stay home. If you think you may have COVID, you know, call your healthcare provider. And collectively, we just need to, as a country, do our best at doing that. And that's our best ammunition at this point in time to helping to reopen our schools as soon as possible.
Do you have an overall feel from the work you've done on how or whether it's a good idea to be looking at these pods? The questioner didn't want to use the term, but I will. This notion of parents forming up in groups outside of school to either amplify what's going on at school or maybe completely take over from the school.
It's a very interesting question, and it's gotten a ton of attention within the past couple weeks as a, you know, sort of an alternative to putting children in the classroom where they may have exposure to a larger group of kids. It's, you know, sort of having this designated cohort of kids, of, you know, whether they are from a friend perspective or from a, you know, classmate perspective, that they would be interacting with each other. You know, one of the things to me that's a really important and probably understated element of pods is some of the equity considerations. When you think that, you know, it's potentially something that children in less resourced areas are probably going to have less opportunity to do things like that. Schools are trying to do things similar in some ways, and the fact that they're trying to do cohorting within the school, so that you would normally, if you had a elementary school, say that's got kids in kindergarten through grade five, there would be a lot of mixing of students throughout the school day as they walk through the hallway, as they share lunch together in the cafeteria or outside on the playground. And schools are trying to minimize those things, kind of cross-exposure with students outside of your class as much as possible, as well as do physical distancing as much as possible within the classroom. So these all sort of have the same philosophy behind them, which is try to minimize your contacts, maximize your social distancing. And of course, the academic pods, it's trying to think about how to support your children for virtual learning, maybe with a team of other parents. We know how hard it has been for parents to have children at home. Whether, you know, this spring, whether they themselves were working or they were trying to help support instruction from the home, parents aren't trained to be teachers, and it's been very tough to implement a virtual curriculum and to keep kids engaged. And there are certainly situations that kids don't even have access to the technology or the internet to be able to engage in the virtual learning platforms. So it's, my heart goes out to parents and teachers everywhere. It's a very tough time and a lot of tough decisions about how do we help support our kids' learning needs and make sure they're safe and healthy and teachers are safe and healthy.
Okay, next question. In the spring, I feel like the distance learning programs were above my son's grade level. How can I make sure he doesn't get left behind again in the fall?
So that is a great question, and there have, you know, from my education colleagues, I know that there has been a lot of efforts over the summer to really sort of strengthen the virtual curriculum for students and give teachers a skill set about how to teach virtually. It is a very different experience than doing in-classroom instruction. And we've had, you know, many parents express that the curriculum taught was not necessarily at the grade level for their child. Either it was too high or too low. So I think that is something that schools are very aware of at this point in time. If there's any silver lining from the fact that COVID happened and schools were closed, it is that it has forced us to think about new and innovative ways to use technology and to use virtual platforms to enhance learning and to connect with parents. But we are on a steep learning curve right now, and something that we're going to continue to have to refine throughout this school year, as I suspect there may be in different communities times that they may be, you know, at least hybrid, if not full virtual.
Okay, the next one says, I've heard people argue that if kids aren't in school, all kinds of bad things will happen developmentally, educationally, et cetera. Is that really true? And then goes on to ask, what would happen if we all just took a year off and restarted schools when we actually had this thing figured out?
We know that in, you know, all other things being equal and there not being a pandemic going on, we would want kids to be in the classroom. It is incredibly vital, particularly for the young kids, for their social and emotional development, and for, you know, for all ages of children in terms of their academic progress. So, you know, we see that as a number one priority of how do we continue to support learning for children, no matter, you know, no matter what the model may be. There's a lot of discussion about actually whether or not, if and when we start to reopen schools, if we should prioritize the younger grade, considerations of it's a lot harder to teach virtually first graders versus high school students. And those kids really do benefit from those interactions they have with their peers, and every, you know, problem solving and conflict resolution and all of those things that you learn as you navigate your ways through grade school and into the upper grades. So there's a lot of benefits from being in school. Of course, the big con at this point in time is we're worried about people's health and safety. So we have to get the science and the public health measures in place to support kids. And when we can, we would like them back in the classroom.
This next question says, doesn't it seem more realistic to go to distance learning that offers tech and Wi-Fi support than in-person learning, where students will not be able to get the facial cues from teachers because of masks, get close to the teacher for help, work with peers who can support them, work in pairs or groups, and do the collaborative work that's beneficial to their learning? If they can't interact at school, this questioner says, wouldn't it be better and safer for teachers simply to work remotely and ramp up the methods for students to work together online and get to know each other online?
So it's another great question, and I think sort of back to something I had mentioned earlier, I don't think there's a one-size-fits-all solution, and I think I laud teachers and parents for being creative right now because they really are thinking outside the box about how best to support students, and there may be places that they can really uplift a robust virtual curriculum, and I think that's wonderful. Particularly when you have areas where, you know, community infection rates are high and there are limited access to testing and contact tracing resources. Back to sort of the, you know, some of the work of the eSchool Plus initiative, my concern is that that doesn't work in every community. And there are communities where children don't have access to technology, or, you know, they may only have one device in the household and multiple children. You may have parents whose primary language is not English and they don't necessarily understand some of the instructional material coming home from schools. And so in those situations, kids are really struggling to learn virtually because they don't necessarily have the resources or instructional guidance to help them succeed. There's not going to be one solution for everybody.
Okay. Next question kind of touches on something you began with. This question wants to know if we have seen any impact on the dropout rate during COVID-19, especially among children of color.
So that is that's a great question. I actually don't know the specific data on dropout rate, but I know we are, you know, the different things that we are worried about include sort of benchmark grades of kids who are, you know, moving from elementary school into middle school into high school into college, as well as their opportunities to take some of the standardized tests that they typically start to take in the fall or the spring. So it's something we're going to have to watch carefully for, because, you know, again, the risks of slides in achievement and widening of achievement gaps are profound, and something that could have a long-lasting impact for students across the country.
Okay, next one. While my children are losing their connections with teachers and other students, my husband and I have been more involved than normal in their schoolwork. Should we be trying to keep the same level of involvement we had pre-COVID, or is it better to dial back, or is it better to be more active in their education? I guess the question is, should we treat this like we used to, or more like we did in the spring?
So it's a good question, and I think, again, it's going to be sort of specific school to school in terms of, I think it's always good to have parent engagement and involvement in what their children are doing in the classroom. A lot of times this spring, parents had to do much more than they normally have to do with a child's education. And as schools, I think, have had some time this summer to start thinking and planning for if they had the need to go virtual this fall, how they would support it. There may be, you know, different levels of interaction with teachers than there was this past spring. So I think every situation may change as we are getting better at doing remote learning.
Next question. What can be learned from other countries that have gone back to in-person schooling? I read about schools in Israel that went back, then an outbreak occurred. Can we assume the same thing would happen here, or are more precautions in place?
There is a ton for us to learn from other countries, as well as places in the U.S. who either stayed open this past spring or have already begun to open this fall. And one important consideration is no two school districts are the same because they are sitting in different communities with different levels of community transmission and different access to resources in the first place. So, there are things to be learned about what went well and what didn't go well, but just because one school district had a negative experience doesn't mean any school district that opened is guaranteed to have a negative experience. But as we see schools have success and failures, we should figure out what they're doing well and what they're not doing well and try to emulate the successes. But that brings up an issue. Parents are legitimately scared right now, as are teachers. And so as we are having these discussions and figuring out what the best option is for different school districts across the country, empowering our stakeholders with as much information as possible and putting it in the appropriate context so they understand what happened in another country versus another county, and whether or not what sort of the risk assessment is for their community will be really important.
Okay, next one. What's the best advice as to how much time elementary school kids should be spending every day on schoolwork? Also, what about reading? I really worry that we'll have a crisis because I don't know how many kids will learn to read under these circumstances.
So we know that, the early years of education, really up to the end of third grade, are when children are learning to read. And this is the group of kids that it is hardest to teach virtually. And there are arguments when safety measures are met that those are kids we should be bringing back to the classroom first because of that exact point that reading is so fundamental to the rest of their academic trajectory that if they're not learning it, it can have devastating impact.
Got one more for you here. And this one, as a parent, should we treat going back to school, even if it's totally online, the same as a normal school year, first day pictures, and et cetera?
I think yes. I think kids are scared right now, and their entire life has gone topsy-turvy this past spring. So I think things that we can do to introduce normalcy into a very uncertain, unsettling time is great. I think doing my favorite thing every year when I would go back to school was getting my school supplies. And, for other people, it's the first day of school pictures. I think having those type of traditions is really important right now as people are struggling with a lot of losses and sadness.
I'll have to share this with you. My daughter asked, or my granddaughter, what can I do to make this easier for you? And she said, just make my lunch and make sure you don't make me sandwiches I don't like. And that seemed to work for her. So.
That's a reasonable request.
For a first grader, I think she nailed it. All right. Hey, listen, thanks so much for the time, Dr. Collins. Take care of yourself.
Thank you.
All right. That's Dr. Megan Collins with the Johns Hopkins Berman Institute of Bioethics. She leads their eSchool Plus initiative. And that's it for this morning's edition of KCBS Ask an Expert. As always, we'll have the audio posted for you fairly soon at kcbsradio.com/askanexpert. You can, of course, while listening, hit the radio.com rewind function if you're using the app or using our desktop version. And that'll take you right back to the answer for a question. In fact, you can rewind back 24 hours on KCBS. Tomorrow morning, if there's a topic as hot as education, it might be indoor air as we learn more and more about the way this disease is transmitted and the places where it's breaking out. We'll have one of the nation's leading experts on indoor air quality, Dr. Richard Corsi from Portland State University. He's been with us before. Interesting questions last time, and much more has developed on that front since then. So he'll be the guest tomorrow morning. Indoor air, send those questions in now at askus@kcbsradio.com.